Welcome to Let Jesus Come, Let Santa Go, celebrating an alternate Christmas, presented by Milo Thornberry and Harriet Grissom. This 3-hour workshop can be used by individuals or a group, all at once or as a series. Milo is former director of Alternatives for Simple Living. He is an ordained United Methodist minister with a doctorate from Boston University and is the former coordinator for hunger concerns with the National Council of Churches. Dr. Harriet Grissom also served on the staff of Alternatives. She is the co-founder of the Atlanta Food Bank and has a doctorate in literature and psychology. Milo Thornberry gives the introduction and guidelines for gift giving.
All celebrations, but especially Christmas, stir deep emotions. And I guess that shouldn't surprise us. I guess maybe one of the reasons is that we gather with families at Christmas. Sometimes these deep feelings are associated with times when the families have gathered from distant parts a long time ago. Or maybe it's from anticipation of hoping and waiting for families to be together again at another Christmas. But sometimes those emotions are also painful. They're painful because of remembrances of painful relations with family members that were present in the past, and also associations, anxieties, where we fear getting together with family again when we know that relations are going to be painful again. Deep emotions are also stirred, I think, because Christmas is always a time of departure from daily routine. We look forward in anticipation to the kinds of distractions that take us away from the cares that we have all the rest of the year to the special cares. It's almost as though at Christmas we have an excuse not to do some things that we would otherwise be occupied in doing. And we have both fond and bittersweet memories of these emotions that are attached to these. We also, I think, have our emotions touched in a special way at Christmas, in what I can only call a renewal of hope for ourselves and for all humanity. You know, even on Christmas Eve, when you hear on the radio or on the television the reports from Bethlehem or reports from Christmas Eve around the world, and there's some kind of model and sentimentality attached to it, and yet there, I think, in most of us, is something that responds and says, I wish there could be peace on earth tonight. And maybe even some anticipation and some renewed hope that it can be, and that comes only at Christmas. The stirring of human emotions, of these deep emotions, are not bad. Celebrations are a critical part of what it means to be human. From all we know, celebrations are one of the important things that separates us from other animals. What are celebrations when we talk about them? Celebrations, worship. Worship may be the most important celebration for people of faith. It's regular. It's an interruption, it's a disciplined, planned time to celebrate. Well, they're what we call rites of passage. Birthdays, graduations, weddings, anniversaries, retirements. They're also the unexpected or unanticipated, unplanned rites of passage, funerals. But they're all celebrations. In addition to these, there are what we might call holy days, Christmas, Easter, the other holidays of faith in which we not only renew faith but also have an interruption in the schedule. And then there are the secular holidays like Independence Day, Memorial Day, Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday. All of these are occasions for celebration. In addition to those that are scheduled, there are unanticipated and unscheduled occasions, a new job maybe for somebody in the family, maybe even a good week at work or survival after a especially hard week at work. Some time taken to celebrate. Well, what are the functions of celebrations? Celebrations are ritualized interruptions in the tedium of daily life, which give meaning to life itself. Now, let me repeat that. Celebrations are ritualized interruptions in the tedium of daily life, which give meaning to life. Well, we might also say that celebrations are reminders of who we are, where we've been, and where we're going. Now, there are some other functions that celebrations can have, but don't necessarily have. At the very heart of what it means to celebrate, that these are times to forget in order to remember. Example, these are times to forget our immediate concerns, to remember what's important, the values and beliefs that shape who we are. It's a time to forget our own problems and to remember and identify with others, with their problems and their concerns. At their best, celebrations are times to forget immediate concerns and to focus on other, more meaningful, more lasting values, relationships. Well, of course, you and I both know that reality is not always in accord with the definition of what celebration is or is supposed to be. Distraction from the purpose of the celebration may be the biggest problem. The rush and roar of commercialized Christmas make it very difficult to remember whose birthday it is that we really want to celebrate at Christmas. We want it to be a holy day, but we're often frustrated when we spend more time and energy preparing for the advent of Santa Claus than we do for the advent of Jesus Christ. We want it to be a time for rejoicing over the birth of a baby, but so often we're so harried and hurried that the only thing that we can do is to wish that it'll be over soon. We want our celebration to be in keeping with the one whose birth we want to celebrate, but we are often embarrassed. Embarrassed at finding ourselves pressured to give and to receive gifts that we really don't have any need for, but gifts because our society says it's important to give, that we give anyway. We're embarrassed because we give and receive these gifts often when there are so many whose needs are so great. Can our celebration of the birth of Christ be more than it has been? Or is Christmas like the weather? Everybody talks about a change in the weather, but nobody does anything about it. How can we make the meaning of Emmanuel, God with us, real during the Christmas season? We may not be able to change the weather, but we can change the way we celebrate Christmas. That's something within our power to do. I didn't say it was easy, but it's something within our power to do. We can reclaim the weeks before Christmas as a time to prepare to celebrate the birth of Christ. Now, we spend weeks before Christmas in preparation for Christmas, and yet what I mean here is that we can reclaim those weeks from the rush and the hurry of buying gifts and doing all that kind of stuff to include time for prayer and study and reflection, to reflect on just what it is we're preparing to celebrate. We can also resist the forces of commercialism, which tell us that the only way to show love is to buy. We can work to restore meaningful gift-giving practices, practices that are personal, thoughtful, considerate of the resources of the earth and of the people of the earth. We can also rechannel a significant portion of what we spent in time and money last Christmas to meet the needs of those Christ came to serve. What you can do about Christmas gifts. Now, it may be that you have not considered this to be a problem, yet I really suspect that most of you have had the experience of not knowing what to give to someone that you cared about, that you've also experienced the pressure of feeling obligated to give a gift to somebody because it was Christmas, and you've also faced the problem as a giver and as a receiver of not thinking that there's anything that you can give to this person that they don't already have. Giving gifts and giving Christmas gifts is important. It's an important way to affirm human relationships. It's important for our whole society and for our culture. It's also very natural to give as a part of our Christmas celebration. We think very naturally of God's gift of God's Son to all of us. We think of the gifts that the wise men brought when they came to see Jesus. And somehow, for at least as long as we can remember, the giving of gifts has been an important part of Christmas. I think we have some problems with giving gifts now, though, that others in other times may not have experienced. We have certain limitations that seem to be placed on us that have restricted the kind and the quality of gifts that we give. For example, if you believe what you hear on see on television, the message of advertising is that you have to buy in order to express love and joy and affection. Not only are diamonds a girl's best friend, but that's really the way to show someone that you care. Or, if you really care about your family, you'll buy them a new automobile. The message that we hear at Christmas is that you have to buy. Now, we're not at all opposed to buying. We're simply opposed to the popular notion, it's very current in our society, that is that in order to express love and joy and affection, that you have to buy something. Now, we're opposed to that notion. For one thing, it's a very limiting idea of giving. Some of the best gifts can't be bought at all. Not only that, some of the best gifts can't be bought in stores. Seems at the very outset of talking about ways that we might celebrate Christmas in ways that are more reasonable, more faithful, we might consider some guidelines in Christmas gift giving. Consider these. First of all, let's get first things first. Whose birthday is it that we're celebrating? Well, you may say, good idea, but how do we give gifts to the one whose birth we're celebrating? Someone who, after all, was born 2,000 years ago. Well, I suggest that a beginning point is not a whole lot different than you would in considering what you would give a gift as a gift for a member of your family. You think about the person, you think about who they are and what they would like and what you're able to give. Do we know what Jesus would want us to give as a gift? I think we do. You remember that passage in Matthew 25, the passage in which he says the nations are lined up before the Son of Man, and he asks them the questions, I was hungry and you fed me, or I was thirsty and you gave me drink, I was naked and you gave me clothes, I was in prison and you visited me. And then he concludes, inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of these, you did it to me. Is it reasonable to assume that we can give Christmas gifts to Jesus by giving to those he came to serve, by giving to those least of these? Gifts of time and skills and money To support ministries among these people would seem to be an appropriate way to celebrate the birth of Christ. And somehow, it seems that these might well be the first on our Christmas list, not the last, and not the afterthought. So maybe the first guideline that we might think about is to remember whose birthday it is. Now, the second guideline would be to plan your gift giving. Now, many of us are not very good at planning. Many of us are like those who go into the stores in the week before Christmas and in a frantic state try to buy gifts for everyone that we can think of. The consequence is, of course, that we're at the mercy of advertising. We're at the mercy of impressions that we've received throughout the Christmas season, which in advertising begins right after Halloween. Probably you know that it's not a good way to do it, and yet we feel caught. And the pressure becomes more and more intense the closer we come to Christmas. If we could plan our giving and plan well in advance. I remember talking to a woman who told me that each year she buys or makes all of her Christmas gifts before September the 1st. That's planning some. Now, what she is able to do, though, is able to have that out of the way, to plan for the things that she wants to give as expressions of love, and to have that done. Then, when the Christmas season comes in Advent, the 4 weeks before Christmas, she's able to take that time, reserve it to spending time with her family, to decorating the house, to doing the things that she really wants to do, and not caught under the pressure of having to buy gifts at the last minute, or even make gifts at the last minute. So what we do when we talk about planning, what we need to do is simply to consider the person to receive and to consider the resources that we have to give. We don't begin by looking at the catalog or going to the malls. Then we just let somebody else do our thinking for us. If we can begin the process of thinking, now, what do we want to do to express our love and our affection for John or Mary? We think about that without thinking about the whole array of new items that are on the market this year, or the things that are being advertised on television or in the catalogs. Chances are we'll come a lot closer to giving something that is appropriate for them and something that they feel good about. Another guideline, and maybe obvious, is to give yourself. Give your presence, and that's not P-R-E-S-E-N-T-S, that's presence. Give your presence and skills. The gift of time is perhaps the most underrated gift for children and older parents. I remember with some hesitation, my wife and I decided to give to our then 7 and 8 year old boys birthday gifts of a day in which we simply spent time with them to do whatever they wanted to do. I think they remember those birthday gifts as being some of the most important in their life. At least they still talk about them. The possibility of giving time for older parents, I think, is vastly underrated, since many of our parents spend much of their time being lonely with time on their hands. We can also give gifts of skill that are also ways to give of ourselves. One very busy parent that I know took time to give their teenager driving lessons. It took a period of weeks, but they gave that as a Christmas gift. Now, there are also ways to give of ourselves that are out of the skills that we have, that is, what we make. I mean, who of us has not either cooked and given away special cooked foods that we we make or have not received the same. But you can do a lot more than that. Alternatives has a best and worst Christmas gift contest. It's kind of a way to call attention in the general media to our concerns about Christmas. And we sponsor this little contest, and the winner was a woman who had given a homemade cookbook to each of the members of her family. During the previous year, she had been in a very difficult situation economically. Her husband had been ill for most of the year, and she had spent most of that time caring for them. They had very limited resources. She spent much of the year in the hospital with him. This woman was acknowledged to be the cook of the family. And what she did was, she hand-typed a 146-page cookbook of her favorite recipes and the favorite recipes of the family. And she decorated it and put it together and bound it and gave that to each of her sisters and brothers and to her parents as their Christmas gift. I talked to another woman who had a kind of similar idea, that she had gone to a stationery store and had purchased a blank calendar. It's a calendar with the days of the new year marked on it, but with nothing else. And she took that calendar, and on the calendar itself and on the other blank pages, she personalized it for each member of the family. And she would put the birthdays of the members of the family on there. And not only that, but then at the top of the calendar, on the month when the family member had a birthday, she would put there a favorite recipe together with her promise that on that birthday she would make this favorite dish for them. One of the other friends of ours had a friend of theirs give her a Christmas gift, but he gave her this Christmas gift in October. He came to her house and presented her with her wrapped Christmas gift and then asked her to unwrap it, and they took it out, and they were bulbs, flower bulbs. And he helped her plant the bulbs. And even though at that Christmas she didn't see the flowers, when spring came and the flowers came up, she could remember that Christmas gift and that for many springs thereafter. There's another person that I know that is very interested in the history of her family. She began to think that maybe her aging parents would like to have in a pretty good form some of the important documents, like the old deed of the house back in the old country in Ireland, and maybe one of the wills of one of the great-grandparents, and put together a kind of history of the family. Well, that's precisely what she did. She made copies of these old documents and had them encased in plastic and wrote a kind of history of one part of the family, and she presented this to her parents as a Christmas gift. As you might be imagining, these gifts usually take time, and that time needs to be planned for in deciding what you're going to do. But I think probably more important than time, even for those of us who fancy ourselves busy people, is that they take imagination. They take breaking away from the notion that in order to give a Christmas gift, we have to buy something. When we've talked about Christmas gifts, we're not opposed to buying Christmas gifts. We're only opposed to being locked into that option. But when you do buy, buy with conscience. There are some questions that you want to ask when you begin to buy a gift for someone else. For example, you might ask, does the gift reflect the values that you want to share? You know, giving a gift is a way to share values, to affirm values that are important in a relationship. What does it say, for example, when you give a toy gun to a child? What kind of values are you expressing? What kind of values are you affirming when you give a gift that perpetuates racist or sexual stereotypes? As I mentioned a while ago, the alternative best and worst Christmas gift contest, the winner in the worst category was a board game by the name of Public Assistance, Why Bother Working for a Living? This board game, which I'm afraid has sold rather widely across the country, is both racist and sexist in its put-down of poor people. Well, what does it say if you choose to give that kind of a gift to a friend or to a child? What are you communicating? Well, I don't know what your values are, but the point is that whatever gift you give, it's value-laden. And when you think about what kind of gift that you want to give, it's important to think about what kind of values that you want to communicate. You might also ask, does the gift encourage conservation rather than consumption? This is not an easy question. For example, you might want to look at it this way, that if the thing is not a necessity, can it be by hand rather than by electrical or gas power? Is that an important way to say something about conservation? It's not irrelevant to consider how much waste was created in the production of this item. And probably about 20 pounds of waste was created for every pound of product that you hold in your hand as the Christmas gift. And a not insignificant part of those 20 pounds of waste that was created for that 1 pound of product are toxic, hazardous waste that have to be dumped, dealt with somewhere. What does the gift say about your view of conservation and consumption? Another question that's important to ask, and it's a matter of conscience, is who profits from the purchase of the gift? Everybody's got to make a living, and so you might say, well, we can buy any kind of gift, and that helps support business, and we need to support business. Indeed, one of the most often used rationales that I hear for expensive gift giving at Christmas is that it's important for the economy. Buying gifts does support people. But it seems to me there's a question to be asked about if we can be intentional about who we support by what we buy, then we have a little control over how our resources are used. For example, you might want to consider giving crafts that are made by Appalachian or Third World self-help craft groups. With these groups, an additional high part of the purchase price goes back to the producer itself. There's now even a group that's importing coffee into this country from Central America. And you can purchase this coffee and be assured that a significant part of that dollar goes back to the campesinos who produce the coffee. Well, these are all important questions to be asked. It's also not irrelevant to consider who you want to support by who sells the product. It may be that the local shop down the street in your neighborhood, not at the shopping mall, needs support. You may have to pay more for it there, but it also may be a way to affirm your support for them. It's not an irrelevant question to ask who profits from the purchase of the gift. There's another question when we're thinking of buying with conscience. Does the gift stimulate spiritual, mental, or physical growth? And I want to offer a warning here. When we think about giving gifts that can somehow be educational or spiritual or uplift, often these gifts can be patronizing and can be disasters as gifts. It's a little bit like giving an etiquette book to a child who for most of the year before Christmas has been misbehaving. Even though the warning is appropriate, between people who care about each other, gifts can assist in growth. They can be ways not only that affirm value, but that affirm a person's concern for the growth of the other. We often think about books in this category. books that enable those that we love to grow. And this is an important way. It's an important question to ask if you're thinking of buying a gift for someone else. Well, then we come to the question, how much are we going to spend on Christmas gifts? Now, I don't have any simple formulas or simple guidelines. It depends on your resources and what you can do and what you want to do. I think there are some ways to plan around what you spend. Often we're almost afraid to plan on what we're going to spend for Christmas, partly because we spend so beyond our budget. I think it might be useful to get perspective if you kind of do a cost analysis inventory of what you spent last Christmas. And I suggest that you just take a paper, and this is much better if you do it with your family or with whoever you share Christmas with. You take a piece of paper, and on that paper, as well as you can remember, you write how much you spend on gifts for family and friends, for mother, father, children, brother-in-law, sister-in-law, Aunt Susie, friends, and write down all the amounts that you can remember. Then in another column, you write, how much did you spend for decorations or for preparing the house for Christmas? In that same list, itemize, how much did you spend for Christmas cards, for food? How much did you spend for travel expenses at Christmas, for new clothes? You know what to add in that. Then total it all up and see what you get. And usually, we're shocked by the total. And I guess the first question that we need to ask is that really important? Is it really important for our celebration of Christmas that we spend that amount of money? I think another question, and one that gets back to the remembering whose birthday it is, we suggest that after you do this inventory, that you consider taking 25% of what you spent last year and make that a birthday gift this year. You spend whatever you want to this year, but you take 25% of what you spent on Christmas last year and make that a birthday gift that you give through your local parish to ministries, to Jesus, those that he came to serve. These guidelines are not intended as rules or straitjackets for giving. Indeed, they're really intended to help you to do what you already do in some fashion when you begin to think about giving at Christmas. It's hopeful that by reflecting on these guidelines that it'll simply help you to do what you already do with some more intention. I think it's important that you talk with your family about these guidelines. And maybe what you ought to do is to simply write your own guidelines with the whole family involved, and then give as you will.
This concludes this presentation.